God speaks to us through His Word this morning in Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. We'll read the first 19 verses. The text is verses 13 and 14. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 1. A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. Surely oppression maketh a wise man mad, and a gift destroyeth the heart. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. Say not thou, what is the cause that the former days were better than these? For thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, and by it there is profit to them that see the sun. For wisdom is a defense, and money is a defense, but the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. Consider the work of God, for who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? In the day of prosperity be joyful, but in the day of adversity consider. God also hath set the one over against the other, to the end that man should find nothing after him. All things have I seen in the days of my vanity. There is a just man that perisheth in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man that prolongeth his life in his wickedness. Be not righteous overmuch, neither make thyself overwise. Why shouldst thou destroy thyself? Be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldst thou die before thy time? It is good that thou shouldst take hold of this, yea, also from this withdraw not thine hand, for he that feareth God shall come forth of them all. Wisdom strengtheneth the wise more than 10 mighty men which are in the city. To that point, we read the holy and inerrant word of Jehovah God. The text for our sermon this morning is verses 13 and 14 of Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Consider the work of God, for who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? In the day of prosperity be joyful, but in the day of adversity consider. God also hath set the one over against the other, to the end that man should find nothing after him. Beloved of God, wisdom is the concern of the inspired preacher Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes. But it must be the right wisdom. There are two different kinds of wisdom that Solomon deals with in the book of Ecclesiastes. One that is to be embraced wholeheartedly in faith, and the other that is to be denied. There is, first of all, a wisdom of the world, which is no wisdom at all. That wisdom is a wisdom of men that leaves God and His mind and His revelation of His truth in Scripture out of man's own understanding of this world and life within it, so that one's view of things is driven by his own depraved nature and inclinations alone. That wisdom Solomon examines in the book of Ecclesiastes and finds to be vanity and vexation of spirit, along with the kind of life that that wisdom would produce. Ecclesiastes 1, 17 and 18, "And I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom," that worldly kind of wisdom, "is much grief. And he that increaseth knowledge," that kind of knowledge, "increaseth sorrow." But in contrast, the true wisdom is a wisdom that takes into account God's own mind and his own view of things as He has revealed that in His holy word. And that wisdom is true wisdom indeed. Here, one has the ability to understand his life properly and to apply the truth of God to his life in the midst of this world. This true wisdom, Solomon says in chapter 7, verse 19, strengtheneth the wise more than 10 mighty men which are in the city. This wisdom is a gift from a sovereign God, as by sovereign grace He enlightens the mind to receive the revelation of His word. And when one has it, it produces joy in his life. Chapter 2, verse 26, for God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge, and therefore joy. Now, having expounded that wisdom that comes from the reception of the revelation of Jehovah God and the rejection of the wisdom of this world, Solomon now applies that right wisdom in a very practical way to one's lot in life and one's own handling of that lot in life. Everyone receives a lot in life, an allotment. The word lot is simply a shortened form of allotment, an entire life's worth of circumstances and events that are allotted to him as he passes through this life. For every single one of us, that allotment includes both prosperity and adversity. Everyone, all of God's people have both in their life. Always, both are sent. And the question is, how are we going to handle that allotment? First of all, by way of introduction, we're going to view that prosperity and adversity as simply the random course of events in any given life? Are we going to speak with that other wisdom, that wisdom of this world, and say that's really just the way that it is? It's the product of random chance, that there just is prosperity and adversity. Here it comes, there it goes. It's the way the ball bounces. It's just the way it is. All you do is you ride the wave up and down in your life, and at the end all goes black, and that's really it. It's all vanity and vexation of spirit. Or do we take our starting point in handling prosperity and adversity from the fact that God, in His infinite wisdom, is in control of this prosperity and adversity, and that He has a purpose with it, a good purpose, as He sends it to us? That would be the wise starting point. That would be the right launching pad from which to handle this prosperity and adversity. That's where the wise preacher would have us start this morning. Notice that he speaks our text in the context of this battle between wisdom of this world and the wisdom of Jehovah God. And he speaks our text in opposition to that wisdom of this world. Verse 13, consider the work of God, who can make that straight which He hath made crooked. God makes straight. God makes crooked. It's not simply chance. Verse 14 again. God also hath set the one over against the other. God does this. He is in control of every last event, circumstance that makes up our lot in life, whether it be good or whether it be evil. It's not simply the way the cookie crumbles. It's not either the devil in opposition to him. Far too many would confess this morning that while God is in control of all the prosperity part, it's the devil who's in control of all the adversity part. And really all you can do is try to pray with enough faith to get God's attention and hope that in this particular case, He will have the will and the ability to overcome the devil in this difficulty in your life. But the inspired preacher will have none of that here this morning in the text. God sends the prosperity, and God sends the adversity. Maybe uses the devil sometimes to send that adversity, but He is in control of absolutely all of it, good things and the bad things. I form light, I create darkness, I make peace, and I create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things, Isaiah 45. From that starting point of the sovereignty of God, starting point of wisdom, the child of God may go on to properly handle both prosperity and adversity in his life. Respond correctly before God to both. Understand God's purposes with both and face the future, trusting his wise and fatherly providence. All of that is the concern of the text this morning as we take it up under the theme, Handling Prosperity and Adversity with Wisdom. Let's notice first, in prosperity, rejoice. Second, in adversity, consider. And third, in both, trust. God in his sovereignty gives to his people times of prosperity. Verse 14, in prosperity, be joyful. The word prosperity means literally times that are agreeable to us. The text is speaking from our perspective. Times that are agreeable to us. Times that we like. Times that are enjoyable. Times where if you would pick out all of the various circumstances that could be there in any one allotment of circumstances in life, you would pick these. They are agreeable. There are times in life where we glide on with no major interruptions. When there is good work and plenty of work to do so that we aren't always anxious and worrisome about providing for our needs and the needs of the kingdom of heaven. Times when we say we have more than our daily bread. Times when there is general good health and strength. We have our colds and our flus to be sure, but things are going along without any major health problems. Perhaps times in our personal lives when marriage is going well, things with our family, children is going well, there's no major issues going on with our teenagers. As fellow believers in the kingdom of Christ that we have good communion and fellowship with, good friends in the body of Jesus Christ, congregation is at peace and unity, no great divisions. In society, we're able to live for the most part, quiet and peaceable life. Not persecuted heavily, we're able to have our own schools, raise our children, serve the Lord, come to worship on the Lord's Day, live a regular life before Him in obedience the other 6 days of the week. The road is pretty straight, it's not really crooked. God sends these times. Whether they are in a life generally or in one sphere or another in an individual life, God sends these agreeable times, this prosperity. And the calling of the child of God is to, in the text, handle that properly, respond properly, knowing the key to wisdom that Solomon, by inspiration, has supplied, that God sovereignly sends this to me in my life, knowing that this is sent by a personal God to me, his child. I may not respond to this however I like. This isn't just the normal way that it is, and I don't have to think about it. I have a calling here, not only with respect to times of adversity, but with respect to prosperity too. First of all, the response of the child of God must be to recognize this as prosperity, and a prosperity that he grants me, a gift. All of God's people have prosperity at different times in their life or in different spheres of their life at different times. There are some of God's people who hardly even recognize it. There can sometimes be people of God who are such habitual complainers. They're convinced that God never sends them anything agreeable in their life. They think that their life is only crooks in the lot in every way, at all times. They fail to see the blessing of that agreeable way that he sends in different aspects in their life. And that must be first. We see it, first of all. And then not pat ourselves on the back for it. Not congratulate ourselves as though we have been the ones who have made our way straight, made our way agreeable to us in the midst of this world, or act like that's just the norm, just the way it's supposed to go. But rejoice before him. Be joyful, for he has sent it to me in his sovereignty. In the day of prosperity, be joyful. Verse 14 says that's a command, that's an imperative. That's how you properly respond. Be joyful. That doesn't mean be giddy. That means, first of all, be joyful with the joy of thanksgiving before Him. Thankfulness. Delighting before Him with gratitude for what He has given. Praying and filling your prayers with thankfulness for the times of agreeableness that He sends in your life. That's part of how we glorify Him with it. Do all things to the glory of God. How? Well, this first of all, that I receive this or I do this with thanksgiving on my lips, consciously thanking Him for what He's given. That's how I acknowledge that He has given it, not me. Many of us are ready always to pray to God for ourselves or for someone else, asking Him to heal the sickness. And we pray that the right way too. If it be Thy will, O God, take away this sickness, this disease. And how many of us pray in thankfulness to God for the times of good health in our life? He sends that. Many of us get angry, complain when things are down. How many of us think to thank Him when things are up? As though that's just expected. As though that's just the way it's supposed to be, that we have delights and joys in our life. We don't really need to thank Him for that. That's just the normal course. That's the default there. I really deserve that it should be that way all the time. And then if something goes the way I don't want it to go, then I'll bring Him in. And if He's not rotten, I'm at least perturbed. A person picking apples on a nice summer day. And the ladder slips out, falls, and he breaks his leg. What about when the ladder doesn't fall? And you have a beautiful day. You take home your apples and you eat them. You thank Him for the beautiful day. You thank Him for the adversity too, to be sure, the point of this text. And prosperity. Be joyful. It's very striking that God warned Israel, in the Old Testament, that His judgments would fall upon them, not only for complaining and bitterness when things didn't go the way Israel wanted them to go, but also for not joyfully thanking Jehovah God when God gave them times that were agreeable to them, times of prosperity. Deuteronomy 28, 45 through 47. Moreover, all these curses shall come upon thee, and shall pursue thee and overtake thee till thou be destroyed, and they shall be upon thee for a sign and for a wonder, and upon thy seed forever. Because thou servest not the Lord thy God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things, because you did not rejoice with thanksgiving before me for all of the times of agreeable nature that I have sent to you, these judgments will fall upon you. This is a command of the text. In times of prosperity, be joyful with thankfulness to God for what He has given. What child receives good gifts from his parents and snubs his nose at them and just thinks that's the way it's supposed to be? That's the default. That's the norm. As though it was simply expected, even though he's a rotten child. Rejoice with thanksgiving and prosperity. We don't deserve any of it. And certainly none of it as it comes with blessing from Him. Secondly, that rejoicing in prosperity means that out of that God-conscious thankfulness to Him who gives it, I enjoy it before Him in the right way. It's not wrong to enjoy the times that are agreeable. Doesn't that too come from that starting point, that launching pad, sovereignty of God? He has sent this to me. He has given this. I may enjoy it without making it an idol, as He has given it to me, His child. It's His gift. Delight in your family that prospers. Delight in the health that He grants to you. Delight in the congregation that is unified in the right way. Even delight in the bank account that prospers, not with selfishness, of course, with generosity, but in the right way, yes. Verses 18 and 19 of Ecclesiastes 5, behold that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink, and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God giveth him. For it is his portion, it is his gift that God gives to him. Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth, and hath given him power to eat thereof, and to take his portion, and to rejoice, joy, in his labor. This is the gift of God. You know, God has created things so that the more conscious I am that he has granted me this, and the more thankful I am to him for it, the more I also enjoy it and delight in it. Like something as simple as a beautiful day that God gives. You thank the Lord for that day, and I guarantee you, you will enjoy that day more. It's the way he's made it. But it's not all prosperity. There's also the crook in the lot, verse 13 says. There's the place in the path of life where God makes the road bend, makes it crooked when once it was straight. Thomas Boston, you may know, an old Puritan minister, wrote a famous book on verse 13 of the text called The Crook in the Lot. He defines the crook in the lot this way. It's when, in the course of events, some of those events fall out cross to us, against the grain of how it was going. These crooks are, verse 14 explains further, adversities. Times literally that are disagreeable to us, our perspective again on them. Times that if they were all lined up in any allotment, we wouldn't pick them out for ourselves. They disrupt our straight path, our enjoyment of prosperity. But further, the text has in mind especially those crooks, those adversities that we cannot change and straighten back out before the face of God. Who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? There are times when God gives us a bend, a crook in the lot, that in his sovereignty he also calls us to straighten out and gives us the possibility of straightening out before his face. That's part of our lot, that we straighten it out. But there's other times that he grants to us a bend, a crook that cannot be straightened. He wills that it be and remain crooked, and there's nothing that we can do about it. And his sovereignty has granted us this, and we must receive it from him and handle it properly. We all have these crooks in our lots. How many would say that they come into the house of God this morning with them in their life here? Times disagreeable to us, painful times, maybe unexpectedly so, come upon us in such a shocking way, like a hairpin turn. It didn't have any signs, no sign with the arrow pointing that way in front of it. These times can come upon our life and just be there so that yesterday it was like this, and now today it's not like that anymore. Today it's like this and is going to be perhaps for quite a bit of time. Financial difficulties perhaps that come upon us. We can't straighten out right now. Business is not doing well. There's not much work for us to do. We can't buy the luxuries, not only, but we're having a hard time with the necessities too. Times when the weather that God controls don't make for a good crop, perhaps, if you're a farmer. Times when there are health issues in life that even last in God's providence, that maybe God makes clear he's not going to take away, or that are going to be there for a while. There's a death in the family. This sudden experience of deep pain and loss, when your own death, said to you, is imminent and cannot be stopped. Times that are almost like a punch in the stomach, and they come upon you. Times when one's personal life or family life is not the way you were expecting it to be. You had this plan, this image in mind for how it was going to go with your family. Now it's skewed, it's not going that way, and I can't seem to do anything about it. Maybe as a young person or young adult, you're dating, you're going to get married, you did it the right way, maybe even met at the convention. And the crook in the lot when she says, it's not going to work out, we're not going to see each other anymore. Issues with a child in your family, difficulties with a brother or sister in the congregation, relationships in the home, crooks in the lot. in these times too, the text says. This is how to handle this. This is how you respond from the starting point of that sovereignty of God. You are to consider. Verse 13, consider the work of God who can make straight what he has made crooked. And again in verse 14, in the day of prosperity be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. The temptation is not to consider. Considering is a scripturally reasoned reflection on a thing. The temptation is maybe to get bitter, to get angry, to be complaining, to cry out, why is this happening to me? And not with any genuine desire to understand what God is doing, but with a fist in the heart of rebellion, harden one's own heart against God, knowing that he has sovereignly placed that in my life, which is why the wise preacher says, in the context of our text, verse 9, be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry. And in verse 10, say not thou, what is the cause that the former days were better than these? Thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this. Well, fall into bitterness. That's not how you respond. And don't be continually asking, why isn't it like this anymore? Pining for the past. Why can't it just be this way? This is the way I liked it, and now it's this way. That's the temptation. Or the temptation, on the other hand, is to be stoic, to just bear it and not think about it. Again, not considering, but put your head down and just bear through to the end. But the calling of the text is to consider, spiritually reflect, to submit to the hand of God in your life, to be sure, but then to reflect upon that. Which command comes too out of that launching pad of the sovereignty of God? God has sent this to me. In his sovereignty, I can't get angry at him, and I can't just put my head down either. God is a purposeful God with all that he does, and if he is sending this with a purpose. I must consider it. Consider what exactly? Consider how? First of all, consider that these crooks in our lot generally come to us in the midst of this world because of sin. There is a curse upon this world for sin. And even if this particular crook in my lot is not because of a particular sin in my life, crooks come generally because of sin, my sin in this world too. Consider that. Consider that because, and you see, I have no right to be angry at him for this. What we deserve is really a lot worse. We deserve the path to never be straight. I deserve crooks in my lot all the time. I deserve, like the reprobate unbelieving, that even the times of prosperity be actually things that drive me into the pit of hell, not blessings to me. I deserve the greatest crook of all, that my life bend and take me down the road to eternal destruction in the pit of hell. What cause do I have to be angry? Consider that, surely, first of all. But then consider, too, what the purpose of God may be with that crook in our lot. It's sent purposefully from a sovereign God. Five things. There's more than that, probably, but five things here. It may be a trial sent to test our faith, the faith of those whom our life touches too, as Job's trials were to test his faith, to bring that faith out as pure and strong, to enliven that faith. There are times when in spiritual laziness, the fifth head of the Canons of Dort talks about this, times when in spiritual laziness that our spiritual life recedes inside of us, is not on the surface of our life. And God uses a trial, a crook in our lot to bring those graces out that he has planted into us so that it's on the surface of our life again. We think about him, we speak of him, we live after him. Don't we experience that in our life? The trials do that. Draw out those graces in us so that it's on the surface, so that our spiritual life is expressed in our life. We need that. Maybe that God uses this crook to turn our eyes up to heaven as our true home. There are times we all know when we get far too comfortable in this life, and we think that this world is our home, and we forget that we are pilgrims and we are strangers passing through here to the heavenly Canaan, we lose that mentality of a sojourner, and God sends a crook into our lot so that we look up, so that we know that what we need ultimately is not here, but there. It's as though he reaches out of heaven with his sovereign hand and puts it under our chin and says, up, remember, look up. God uses a crook in our lot sometimes to convict us of a sin. Sometimes sin generally, as we understand that crooks come generally because of sin in this world. Perhaps a specific sin too, though. Joseph's brothers, years and years after they sold Joseph into slavery in Egypt, convicted of that sin by a crook, a trial that God sent to them in their life. Genesis 42, verse 21, when they were not having a good time getting food from Egypt for their father Jacob and the family back in the land of Canaan. It was a trial upon them. We read nothing of the brothers' conviction of their sin. They might have had it, but we read nothing of it. And selling Joseph into slavery until this crook in their lot. Verse 21, and they said one to another, this is years and years later, we are verily guilty concerning our brother, and that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us. God uses crooks sometimes to wake us up to sin, to make us think about our sin, to convict us of it, and to lead us to repentance before him. Sometimes God uses crook in our lot to expose a sinful pattern or attitude to ourselves that we were blind to, we weren't even aware was there in our life, so that as this trial comes upon us, our sinful response to it exposes that we've had this pattern for so long and been blind to it. Maybe we were proud in our life and living in pride, and now this crook exposes our pride so ugly and blatantly that even we can see it. Maybe we were living self-reliant. And now this crook makes that come out, exposes it. We're brought low before him in humility. He sanctifies us that way. That's how he grows us. Sometimes a crook in the lot may be simply to lead us closer to himself. Psalm 50, verse 15, and call upon me, God is speaking, call upon me in the day of trouble. I will deliver thee, and thou shalt glorify me. We cry out to him in our distress. Maybe we were not crying out to him before, so that the words of the psalmist are pressed out of us. Psalm 119, 57, thou art my portion, O Lord. It's thee that I need, and I come close to his precious side. So that consideration is the proper response to trial, to crooks in the lot. Because God is sovereignly sending this to me, and sending this to me at this point in my life with a purpose. Consideration is the proper response because it brings comfort and peace and patience in the midst of that trial. Because the point of considering, beloved, isn't even necessarily to figure out beyond the shadow of a doubt which one of those five things I said is the case in this instance, or exactly which combination of 1 and 4, or 3, 4, and 5. Although you may see something of that. But it's to consider that God's way is any of these, and all of these perhaps, and that they're all good purpose. And that he will accomplish that in me in the midst of this life. And I can see him doing it too so many times. Consider, then I may be patient and sit quietly and submissively in these times of trial. Knowing that even though my path isn't as straight as I would like it to be, that there is a crook or crooks in my lot, I am being made straight by that crook. And therefore I trust him that he in his sovereignty will give me both prosperity and adversity in the mix and measure that is best for me as his child and for all of his people in the kingdom of Christ. Notice that the text is not only making the point that God sends both the prosperity and the adversity, but it is making the point that he also sends them over against each other. Verse 14, God also hath set the one over against the other, It's not only purposeful when he sends the prosperity. It's not only purposeful when he sends the adversity. It's also purposeful how he sends them in relationship to each other in my life. And the wise preacher says that we must recognize something of that too to handle these things with wisdom. In nature, God sends different seasons. He sends summer and he sends winter. He also sends those seasons over against each other. The one is there, summer is there. And then winter comes, and winter is set over against summer so that it cuts summer off, and winter is there. And then again, the other way, summer comes and it's set over against winter and cuts it off. Wouldn't be good for us. If it was only winter all the time, all over the face of the earth, or only summer all the time all over the face of the earth with no mix. The winter in parts of the earth brings everything back to square one. All the growth is killed so that when the summer comes over against it, that new growth can crop up. We need both. So too with prosperity and with adversity. He has to send the one over against the other. Prosperity to cut off the adversity, either in our life as a whole or in one specific sphere. And adversity to end the prosperity. It wouldn't be good for us if it was only prosperity, and it wouldn't be good for us either if it was only adversity. You might say, if there are so many good spiritual things that he can accomplish in us with times of adversity, then why not only send us adversity in our life? Here is the answer. The answer that he gave to Israel. Isaiah 57, verse 16. For I will not contend forever, for the spirit should fail before me, and the souls which I have made. God says to Israel, I was always chastising you as my people. Your spirit would fail before me. The soul that I have made within you would crumble, crush under that. Be like a father. As always, every second of his child's life, trying to build character in his child. Nothing wrong with building character in your child, of course. That's all he does, and all he thinks about, and never actually delights in his child and enjoys his child. Crushes something of that child's spirit. The soul crumbles under that. It can't handle it. It's too much if that's all there is in this relationship of father to son. Well, so too it would be with us before the face of God. He knows what he's doing, beloved. He knows that he has to set prosperity over against adversity so that we don't faint under it, whether in our whole life or in different spheres of our life. He knows that he must mix in joys with the sorrows so that our spirit is not crushed. That's why life is the way that it is. He gives joys, gladness, prosperity all over against the adversity, that we may also simply enjoy, rejoice what he has given before him. Well, then you might say, why not just always give us joys? Why not always give us times that are agreeable to us so that we can always be rejoicing with such enjoyment before him? And he gives us this answer through the Apostle Paul. In 2 Corinthians 12, verse 7, when the apostle had a crook in his lot, and lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. You see, there is a great danger that we puff ourselves up if there is only times that are agreeable to us in our life. There's a great danger that we begin to trust in ourselves, to think that our right hand hath gotten us this. There's a danger that we cross the line over simply enjoying the gifts that he has given in a right way into revelry in those things, into taking our eyes off of the giver and making idols of the gifts themselves. We're not guarding our hearts, where we let ourselves go over the line in love for the world, pursuing the world and all of its idolatry. So he must come and set adversity over against the prosperity in our life or in one aspect of our life to keep us from falling that way. And so we must trust that he will grant to us the perfect amount of prosperity and the perfect amount of adversity that we need. He sovereignly arranges our lives, beloved, so that the one is over against the other. He sovereignly decides how much of the one and how much of the other. He sovereignly decides when one will be set against the other, how it will be set against the other in our life, and how much of one or the other in different aspects of our life. We're not all the same. He has the same purposes for many of us in many different ways, but different purposes for us in different ways. As we live our life in the kingdom and covenant here on the earth, there's a different purpose for us in heaven too that he's preparing us for in this life, a specific role, function in the kingdom made perfect in glory. And he controls the mix and measure and the times in such a perfect way to fit us for what we need to be and do now, need to be and do there. Some maybe even more adversities or in more aspects of life. Some maybe more times agreeable. But we all have both. Prosperity and adversity set over against each other in any given life. I must expect that in the future too, and trust that God knows what is best for our future, the future of his kingdom as a whole. Verse 14, God also hath set the one over against the other to the end that a man should find nothing after him. That is, he does this partly to the end that a man should not try to seek to discover what's coming next, what's coming after him now. Is it going to be months or years of agreeable times with no crooks in the lot? Or agreeable time in this aspect of my life and a crook in that aspect of my life? Or months and months and years of adversity with no prosperities to the end that he should, instead of trying to do that and instead of trying to see what's going to happen, should instead just let go and leave it in the hands of God, trusting that he knows what he's doing and will do what is wisest, and falling back to where the wise preacher would have us, simply rejoicing in prosperity and considering in adversity and recognizing that both are sent in whatever mix or measure out of pure, pure love. You see, beloved, he loves us. In Jesus Christ, he loves us. The Christ who, from the first day of his life upon earth, had a bend, had a crook in his lot. It took him straight to the pit of hell. The triune God decreeing, Father, Son, and Spirit in all eternity, that this would be his allotment, this would be his lot in life, that it takes such a bend that he go into the pits of hell, bearing the eternal wrath of God for your sin and for mine, in order to assure for you and for me that no matter how many crooks we have in our lot, no crook ever ends us there. And assuring for us that whatever crooks we have and whatever prosperity we have, instead of driving us to that place, it keeps us away from that place and drives us to his precious side. So let me ask you, let me ask me, knowing all of that, do you really want to take the reins? Do you really want to take control of your own life? Do you really want to control the mix and measure of the prosperity and the adversity? Do you want to determine your own path? Would you want to say all prosperity and no adversity, knowing the good use of adversity for your life and all the life your life touches? Would you want to throw off a specific adversity that he gives? Oh, it's painful. But knowing that it is exactly what is needed for you in the kingdom of Jesus Christ to bring you to that end. He loves you in Jesus Christ, and your end is not the end of the pit of hell. It's all driving you there. So shall we not let go and leave all of that to him and simply rejoice in prosperity and consider in adversity and look forward to the day when the path that we are on now, no matter how many crooks that it is, ends in a place where there are no more crooks, and where the straight path is the truest kind of straight. Let's leave it at that. That will be wisdom. Amen. Father in heaven, I give thee thanks for thy sovereignty for good that we see in the cross of Jesus Christ. Give us peace and contentment in thy way, and thankfulness in all things, for Jesus' sake. Amen.